Hello, everybody. It's Nancy Rowe and Kim Brown from Liver Lineup, Updates and Unfiltered Insights. So thank you so much, Kim, for joining me today. I really wanted to talk a little bit about the controversial removal of birth dose hepatitis B vaccination from the infant vaccine series. And I would say that it's not, you know, this is controversial, right? It was delayed on the vote. So it's come up a couple of times, and then it finally did pass that they were removing the recommendation for birth dose vaccination. And I know personally, as a hepatologist who saw the initiation of birth dose vaccine and the impact on hepatitis B incidence and prevalence in the United States, I was a little surprised that this was something that was recommended. What were your gut reactions?
Yeah, I think, you know, both of us are transplant physicians, so we see the, you know, the devastating effects of hepatitis B all the time in our patient population. And I worry for patients. I was surprised because there is so much data supporting this as a strategy, and we've seen such good results over time since initiation of the birth dose vaccine schedule. We've seen such a decline in patients who have chronic disease. In fact, I was thinking the other day, it's hard for me to think of the last person that I transplanted for hepatitis B because of the changes that we've made, you know, based on the science.
Yeah. So as a center, we have had a couple of hepatitis B patients transplanted, but for liver cancer. And I think it's also really important to emphasize that the Hep B vaccine is an anti-cancer vaccination. It was one of the few vaccines that was linked to preventable cancer-related death. And, you know, we also had a patient transplanted not that long ago with reactivated hepatitis B from stopping their medications, and then the Hep B reactivated and they went into liver failure. And that was an older gentleman. But we don't see young people with Hep B very often. And I think it's because of this universal recommendation for vaccination. I think it's also nice to emphasize that this is not U.S.-centric, right? Hep B, birth dose Hep B vaccination is recommended throughout the world and has had sizable impact in places like China and Europe. I mean, you know, we are not alone in advocating for this birth dose vaccine.
Yeah, no, I feel very fortunate, actually, to live in a country where we have the resources and the science to support something like that. I think that much of the data that's come out of the Asia Pacific area certainly drove a lot of this because of the risk of transmission from mother to child. And I have seen the positive effects. I worry too, because very likely, the patients that I currently see that may have advanced disease are diagnosed at a late stage. You know, half of the patients that have hepatitis B are not aware. It's one of those diseases that doesn't come with a label to the doctor's office. And so unless patients are identified, they have progressive disease, and it can result in things like cancer in your patient, cirrhosis, liver failure, and need for transplantation and death. So I have always applauded that that title or that label of an anti-cancer vaccine, because it really is an anti-cancer vaccine.
Yeah, I think another one of the, you know, misnomers is that this is a you know, disease that's limited to high-risk behaviors. When we look at success for elimination, it's really Hep B surface antigen prevalence in five-year-olds, which is implying that it's not, you know, 25-year-olds who have engaged in high-risk behaviors. It's really that this chronic disease is strongly limited to early childhood exposure. And I think the guideline or the recommendations were to continue to offer birth dose vaccination if the mother is hepatitis B positive or of unknown status. But it's not just mom that you're going to get hepatitis B from. A lot of the high-risk exposure is in communities or in households. And so, unless you're absolutely certain that your infant or your child is never going to be anywhere where they might be, exposed or bitten or, have early childhood exposure, then separating this to risk-based behavior is really a disservice again to these individuals that are at risk for exposure to a chronic, non-curable disease.
Yeah, I also, and you've experienced this, we've all experienced this in medicine, where when you set up guidelines for testing, right, you never get to 100%. So I worry if you look, the recommendations for testing all pregnant women actually preceded the recommendations for universal vaccination. And so in the late 1980s, so it's been a lot of years, and still to this day, about 18% or so of women who are pregnant have not been tested for hepatitis B. So it is a tough strategy when a significant percentage of patients that are pregnant and potentially placing their child at risk are not tested. So I worry that it is not a great strategy. It's why we've changed our strategy for a number of screening tests around the country, because as clinicians and as patients, we don't follow recommendations 100%.
No, and we found the same thing. We audited our data partly to see if we were screening for hepatitis C in pregnancy, which is a newer, recommendation. But even though hepatitis B vaccination was recommended and often ordered, we found that over 20% of our patients had no documented hep B surface antigen that was in the chart. Now, it could have been done someplace else, but it could have just been that it was recommended and not obtained. And so this means that this is going to really shift the onerous job of talking about vaccinations to either, individuals who have no prenatal care, or you can't find the results. So, in your OBGYN clinic, or when someone comes into labor and delivery and you don't know their vaccine status or their hep B surface antigen status, you're now having to have a complicated conversation with them as to why their infant needs vaccination when, you might not have had to do that. Or now, if it's recommended at 2 months or whenever in the future, you're pushing that to the pediatrician. And pediatricians have a lot to do. And if you've now stigmatized something that has universally been proven to be safe and effective, that's going to be hard. I can see as a pediatrician, I may not really want to have that conversation, especially if a parent's like, well, they took this away from babies. Why would I want to give it to my child?
Yeah. I also, and I'm sure you do this with your patients as well, talk about the opportunity that we miss is actually twofold, right? If we don't protect infants, first for the infant, if they acquire hepatitis B and become chronically infected over time, places their health at risk. But as we know, the majority of infants, that the vast majority, 99% in my opinion, but more like 90 to 95%, will acquire the infection if mom is pregnant at the time of birth. And we recognize that those infants become the carriers, right? So it's really a twofold issue, because those are the individuals that then carry the virus and can infect others and become the population of patients that place others at risk. So I agree with you. The data really supports that the best protection is at the time of delivery, within a few hours of delivery for both vaccination and if the mom is positive for HBig as well.
And children respond very well to this vaccine. I think that there's recent data from Alaska demonstrating that 40 to 50 years after vaccination, the person is still protected. Very, very few cases where core antibody became detectable where it hadn't been, but no evidence of acute hepatitis, no evidence of liver cancer, so that we have decades of very valuable information in another high-risk group. Alaskans were at higher risk for hepatitis B.
Yeah, no, I think of that all the time when I talk to our fellows about why we vaccinate individuals, right? We vaccinate the youngest because they're the highest risk of becoming the chronic carrier. And you're right, the protective effect of this vaccine is really long-standing. I think other studies have shown that even if you are exposed to hepatitis B, even if your surface antibody has declined, your clinical course is much less severe, and the chance that you will become a carrier after that clinical course is significantly reduced. So the protective effects, as you said, are really long-lasting.
And I think it's important to recognize that exposure, even if you aren't sick, does impact things like cancer management down the line. I mean, we see this in our transplant patients where if you have Hep B exposure and you get a kidney transplant, you're going to need lifelong medication to prevent the hepatitis B from reactivating. So that, if you can just prevent an infection, it's really got multiple impact across your health spectrum. And although we think that hepatitis B can be controlled, it doesn't eliminate all cancer risk. And there is extrahepatic manifestations of Hep B, which is the fancy way of saying that people who have Hep B are not necessarily as healthy as someone who doesn't have Hep B.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting point that you raise about the oncology issue. I was at an advisory board many years ago, and a very prominent cancer center had instituted an Epic Stop prior to writing for chemotherapy, where patients had to be tested, which is the recommendation that patients be tested for hepatitis B to look for risk of reactivation. And a very significant, well over 25% of the time, physicians bypass that and prescribe the chemotherapy agents anyway. So again, getting back to how well we follow recommendations, it's not as good as we would hope.
Well, I know that I personally have been vaccinated. In medicine, I did not want to take the risk of getting exposed to hepatitis B in the medical situation and becoming sick. My children are all vaccinated, birth dose vaccine because of how old they were. And if someone asked me my recommendation, I would tell them the Hep B vaccination is safe and effective, and I would advocate for birth dose vaccine or catch-up vaccination if you did not get vaccinated when you were a baby across the board. I think it is rare that an individual has a contraindication and shouldn't be vaccinated. And if someone does have a contraindication, making sure the people around them don't have Hep B is the best way to protect the person who cannot get a vaccine.
I completely agree. Completely agree with that. I think back to when I was a resident, and my first exposure to the devastating effects of transmission were when one of my co-residents actually acquired hepatitis B from an eye splash from an individual that was infected. And so there's a lot of things that can affect our ability to protect ourselves, and the best way, I think, is through vaccination.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I look forward to the debate. I mean, the recommendation is out there, but if there's one thing we know, that it is things are not written in stone. So this has the ability to change, or as healthcare advocates, we have the ability to make recommendations, even if it's slightly different than the recommendations coming from the CDC. And so I will see what happens over the next few months. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I agree. Conversation needs to continue.
Yes. All right. Well, this was Kim and Nancy from Liver Lineup, updates and unfiltered insights. Thank you for joining us.